Today's program was brought to you by Blueprint, the original juice cleanse program to offer different levels of intensity depending on your needs and current diet. For more information, visit blueprint.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Good afternoon. This is your host, Nathaniel Coburn, in the studio with Sunny Jane, leader of the Brooklyn Bhangra outfit Red Bharat, which just released their second album, Shruggy G, back in January. This juggernaut of funky, fresh party flavors will be performing their unique blend of jazz-influenced Bhangra on the Joe's Pub stage Saturday, May 18th at the Great Googa Mooga in Prospect Park, Brooklyn, New York. You can check them out and stream their new album online at www.redbharat.com. Good afternoon, Sonny. Welcome to the studio.
How are you doing, Nathaniel?
I'm doing great. We were talking outside a little bit earlier, but your music is just so full of life and full of energy and full of a wide range of influences, it seems. Tell us about the trajectory that you've been on these last 4 years with this group.
Yeah, it's been really wonderful and fortunate for us. We're an 8-piece band. Born and bred here in Brooklyn, New York. And, the original vision was kind of drawing roots from my Indian American experience of being born and raised in upstate New York, but drawing upon these influences that I saw in India going back as young as 5 years old, really stemming from these Bharat marching bands, which Bharat is a wedding procession that happens right before the ceremony. And it involves a brass tradition that's been prevalent in India since the 18th century. And, of course, Punjabi Bhangra rhythms as well, which is like the dance party music of Northwest India, but also really mm-hmm. prevalent in Bollywood music. So kind of culling these experiences together, as well as the jazz music that I grew up with and, being a generation of rock and hip-hop. But bringing everyone together in the band, everyone's coming from various musical backgrounds. We just let everything seep into the sound and what the band has become is a community, kind of inclusive party band that just injects just joy and energy and fun. And that's kind of the trajectory we've been on, and we hope to continue on just taking the sound and this music to any place we can bring it to and have fun.
What kind of influences do you like to draw from? I mean, you mentioned hip-hop and jazz as well, but like how do those fit together for you as a composer?
Well, in terms of jazz and Bhangra and hip-hop, all those styles of music have that buoyancy, that swing to it. Same with go-go music from D.C. It has this inherent kind of swinging triplet feel as opposed to rock and roll, which is like really straight and duple meter, Mm-hmm. The improvisatory aspect of jazz lends itself to Red Bharat. A lot of us are coming from a jazz background, and that keeps things fresh for us, when we're improvising on stage, whether it's solos or a spontaneous conduction, that I might give a cue to horn players or drummers. So that is a very huge component of what we're trying to do. In terms of composing, it's not necessarily, so segmented as I just laid out in terms of, okay, this is going to be hip hop and we're going to meld it here with Bhangra music. And then we're going to have our jazz, thing come into here. It just comes out naturally in terms of, music I grew up with, music I grew up listening to, and it kind of started. It started when I was in college and started composing, and almost felt restricted or not true to myself in terms of composing to the standard jazz form or 32 bars AABA form. While I understood it and delved into the vocabulary and absorbed it, I was hearing so many other sounds that I grew up with that I wanted to start composing music that made sense to me. And I stripped away all that stuff that I learned in Jazz Theory 3 or that I learned in composition and arranging classes. I mean, I certainly informs my process for composing, but I don't adhere to that necessarily. I kind of realize that after a while, it's like whatever's in my head and whatever emotions I'm feeling, that's what I need to relay on music, on music paper, or just by teaching the music to the various guys in the band. And then everyone in the band is coming from a different perspective, so they're lending their sound and their idea of music to the feel and to the overall component of what Red Bharat is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it seems like a product of our particular time and place to hybridize all of these different things. You know, I mean, you live in a borough that is full of a wide array of different sounds, growing up in a time when we're exposed to a wide array of different sounds. The instrument you play, the dhol, as a band leader, to play that instrument, what does that... I'm trying to articulate it, right? There's a command that you have as being the front man and the drummer at the same time, and being out in front and giving cues with that instrument. Tell us about the instrument a little bit.
So it's called a dhol. It's literally just means drum. You know, it's mm-hmm. the drum of Punjab, and it's seeped into other areas, of course, in India. But it's a barrel shaped instrument with a bass side and a treble side, and I play them with sticks. My treble side, I have a very thin bamboo stick, mm-hmm. so I have some retroflex motion on that as well, so I can get a lot of rolls and buzzes. And then the other side, the bass side, is just a goat skin that I play with a very thick kind of stick to just get a big thumb sound, big boom sound, you know, bass sound.
Slight curve on the end of the stick.
Exactly,
right?
Exactly. But you don't hit it with the curve into the drum like you do a talking drum. You hit it with it pointing down, so you get more surface area on it. Mm-hmm. So you have a really big kind of present sound. You know, it just... I guess I was leading the band because I put the band together, but it wasn't really by design that I'm going to be out in front and I'm going to be leading this band. It was really intended at that point in my life when I was putting this group together. It was another project I had in mind. You know, I'm a jazz drummer as well, play kit, mm-hmm. play symphonic percussion. I was doing a bunch of other things. And it was an idea I had to put this group together where the dhol was the signature sound. It was the centerpiece of the band, in the sense that a lot of groups I've always put together are melding together these influences, Indian influences, rock and roll, jazz, whatnot, electronica, drum and bass. But I wanted to do something that was completely acoustic and that was just featuring the dhol, because oftentimes in this Indian quote-unquote fusion of a world or hybridization, it's just done with sitar or tabla or vocals, Indian vocals. No one ever really... I've never really known anyone to do it with the dhol, you know, except perhaps the Dhol Foundation from the UK, but mm-hmm. that's just primarily a dhol group. So when I started out, I was actually jumping back and forth. I was playing dhol and then switching the chair with my drum set player, Toma Fujiwara, and he would also jump on percussion as well when I'd get on the drum set. But after about a year, it just, you know, it didn't make any sense to do that. I mean, it was actually, I thought it was going to be more comfortable to just jump on the drum set and get a break from dhol, mm-hmm. and it actually was more challenging because it was activating different muscles in my arms. So I'd get on the drum set and I was just playing it like a caveman, like I just had no touch or finesse. Mm-hmm. It would just be lost after I was playing the dhol because I was just using different muscles. So just naturally after a year, it was just, okay, I'm just going to be up front and this is what I'm going to do. The drum is loud, so mm-hmm. that commands presence, that commands an ability to lead. Just being out in front as opposed to being on the drum set when I used to lead my groups, it's a little bit easier to just turn around and look to the side to make cues as opposed to being in the back on a drum set and yelling out certain things or having to give musical cues. So it's been liberating in that aspect, you know, of not just being on a stationary drum set. Also, because I'm not stationary, I can move around.
Sure.
I can flow around with the different guys in the band.
And that aspect of it, I'm sure, is particularly galvanizing to the audience.
You know? Yeah.
So. Like it's a very different thing to see you out front, you know, dancing around with this huge barrel, you know, strapped
sure.
around your waist, and to go about it that way, it's a unique look as well as sound.
Sure.
So you grew up in Rochester, but your family's from the Punjab region,
correct? Right? Yeah, my parents were both born in Sialkot. It's a city in western Punjab, which in 1947, there was partition in the subcontinent, western side, Pakistan, eastern side, India. So at that time, they had to flee over to the eastern side of Punjab. And then my folks settled in different regions. My mom had settled in Delhi. My dad settled in a small town in Rajasthan. And in 1969, my dad moved to Rochester, New York, and started working at University of Rochester. He was a research scientist in crystallography. And about 6 months later, the rest of the family came, which was my sister and my mom at the time. So I was born and raised in Rochester, but just the immediate family was, and still is, in the States. All the rest of my family is back in India. So we go back there, you know, since I was born, we're going back pretty often, probably once a year. And even, you know, a little less nowadays, but I try and get back there at least once every
sure,
2 years.
Sure, sure. Culturally, what did your family bring over with them, and what do you retain? And what do you hold on to? What do you claim is yours?
That's a good one. One very obvious one. My last name is Jain, and there's a religion called Jainism that is a 6,000-year-old Indian religion. Main tenet being nonviolence. But when my dad came over to Rochester, he started the Jain Association in Rochester, which was at the time three Jains. It's grown much larger since then. But he was also one of the helping hands and founding members of the Indian Society of Rochester as well. Mm-hmm. So he was very much involved in the Indian community. The family, therefore, was very involved. You know, it's like every Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday there were some events we were going to or hosting some picnic somewhere. So Jainism is very integral to my life in terms of the main tenet being nonviolence. It also directs the diet and the belief of what we should be consuming.
Because you're not talking about nonviolence just in the sense of let's not hurt people, but we're talking about nonviolence in all manners of being and all things, right?
Exactly. Nonviolence upon the earth and just our ability to minimize consumption and hurt upon the earth, whether it be environmentally, understanding just the ecosystem and just when... there was always these stories told of killing flies in a certain region and what that would do to the ecosystem of the certain plants that were living there that needed these flies or needed these, these bugs to exist and how everything really works in universality. So it's not just in terms of people, but it's food as well. So minimizing, what you eat in that direction. Not eating any animal products. And in the last couple of years, what I've been going back and forth with all the information out there with the meat and dairy industry is trying to understand what does that mean for me in terms of, I grew up vegetarian. I grew up vegetarian, not eating any meat or fish or eggs. And then now I've come to this point where how much is the meat and dairy industry really feeding off each other? Mm-hmm. Very much so, as we know. So I've come to this point where I'm trying to minimize my dairy intake as well. Also for health reasons. There's numerous studies that point to increase in heart disease and cholesterol by having any animal products, and heart disease runs in my family. Mm-hmm. So it's something I've been very conscious of in terms of just being healthy and just my belief spirituality wise.
This idea of having no negative impact on the earth, it seems difficult at first glance to reconcile with living in a city, especially New York. And I'm curious as to, in terms of just the day-to-day living within those kinds of principles, how do you do it?
I don't know. It seems funny and a little bit silly to talk about it now because it seems like everyone I know or everyone just does it in the city, but just recycling. This is something I grew up when I was 4 years old. It's like my mom was very adamant about making sure we didn't throw away cardboard or that we didn't waste glass or we didn't waste food. It was very a not wasteful environment that I grew up in. And everyone does that nowadays. Well, not everyone, but, it's very prevalent, So I'm conscious of that. I'm conscious of just... I've never been someone that hoards things or needs many things. Essentially, all I need is a roof. I need some food, and I need my music. I'm not someone that shops a lot for clothes or gadgets or things like that. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong in that, but it's just I've been a person that requires minimal things to live. Minimal belongings, and it's not just. It's not just because of being Jain. It's also just because I was a jazz musician, struggling for years in New York, and just you learn how to live in this city on minimal things.
Sure.
But yeah, it still exists to the level of food again. Being part of a CSA and supporting locally grown sustainable farms that are around in Long Island and going to local Clinton Hill CSA or Bed-Stuy Clinton or Bed-Stuy CSA and being part of that and getting naturally organically grown foods. And understanding how that works in the industry and how that works economically and just that level of understanding.
Absolutely. We're going to take a short break, and while we do, we'll listen to a track from your new album, Shruggy G. It's the title track called Shruggy G. Be right back with Sonny Jain.
is the original juice cleanse program to offer different levels of intensity depending on your needs and current diet. Designed to purify and detoxify, Blueprint Cleanse is made from the freshest 100% raw and USDA certified organic ingredients, cold pressed to retain nutrients and flavor. Blueprint also offers a line of organic juices, cold pressed and raw, in a variety of fruit and vegetable combinations, and available in individual bottles. Blueprint Cleanse is available at Whole Foods Market and many other retailers across the U.S. To learn more about their line of organic cleanses, juices, and other products, visit them today at blueprint.com or call them at 866-774-6831. That's 866-774-6831. Work hard, play hard, cleanse, repeat.
All right, we're back in the studio with Sunny Jane, band leader of Red Barat. They're going to be performing at the Great Googa Mooga on May 18th. It's a Saturday. Sunny, before the break, we were talking about Jainism and how you practice it in Brooklyn, New York. I'm curious what your family how your family has preserved their food culture and food ways from back home. From Punjab.
Sure. Well, you know, growing up eating just, you know, primarily Indian food. One interesting thing, you know, with Jainism, and it's a little bit of a misconception, but most people think that I don't eat potatoes or any root vegetables, which there are many Jains that don't, because when you uproot from the earth, a lot of organisms are being killed. But it wasn't necessarily so the case with me. You know, I grew up eating potatoes and things like that, and carrots and whatnot. But one kind of interesting thing is my mom didn't cook with onions and garlic. So all the Indian food she was making, you know, we could eat onions and garlic if we were out and about at other friends' houses or other Indian restaurants. But at home, all the dals she was making, all the beans, all the sabjis or vegetables, rather, that she was making didn't have any onions and garlic. So, you know,
Did you grow up with a taste for that?
I grew up definitely liking onions and garlic, but I didn't necessarily miss it eating at home.
Sure.
I think the food she was making, regardless, was already tasty, you know. But what has been interesting now that I'm kind of revisiting and starting to make all these dals at home, I've tried it with onions and garlic, and then I'll try it without it the way my mom makes, and I actually prefer it without it. There's something with the natural taste of the lentils or the way that they're cooked with just a few of the spices, you know, that just is much more appreciative on the palate, on the tongue, than putting onions and garlic in there. I still, of course, cook, you know, some dishes with onions and garlic, but that's one way that my family, in terms of diet and food, you know, they've all grown up vegetarian. You know, the Jain religion is something that stems pretty deep into generations of my family, to the point where I have four or five Jain Maharajis, Jain monks in my family that are somewhat, you know, well known in India when they go over there, mostly on my dad's side. And so, you know, I'm coming from a deeply religious family and background. And for me, you know, it's definitely translated through food. It's also translated through music. On this latest CD, the Red Barat CD, and all CDs I've previously released, I always have one Jain bhajan, which is a bhajan is a devotional song. And these are like the lullabies that I grew up with, you know, that I remember going to University of Rochester at the local church that my dad would rent out the basement, and we'd have our pujas, our religious ceremonies, you know, once every couple weeks, and we'd grow up singing these songs. And of course, as a kid, I was dragging my feet having to go to these because it was a Sunday and I just wanted to go out and play ball with my friends.
Of course.
And as you get older, it's nostalgic, it's wonderful, it's warming, you know, it's
grounding. I'm sure
it's grounding, and it was a blessing. It was a blessing to grow up with that, and to still have that, you know, in our everyday lives, where we celebrate certain Jain holidays, and we get together and we have pujas with my family, and to sing those songs just, you know, makes me tear up a little bit, because I've been doing it for years, and when we're singing it, I hear the voices now, but I'm still hearing the voices of the past, and I'm hearing voices from even beyond that, from way past the generations of my family. And so every album I've released, I always have one Jain bhajan on there, and typically closes out the album. It's just a very nice kind of palate cleanser or something, you know, after all the really intense music on Red Barat that's just party vibe, then here's a nice, very serene, chill tune. So it translates, you know, spirituality, wise through my music, through the food and the way that I'm cooking. You know, I'd mentioned that I've been trying to minimize my dairy intake. Mm-hmm. And when I'm home in Brooklyn, I very much just cook vegan. You know, I strip away everything I possibly can. And that's been fun and challenging in the last 2 years, just trying to figure out how to cook vegan. And not have to rely on cheese or dairy or butter or anything to fatten up the taste, but relying on avocados or relying on nut creams or different things like that to fatten up that palate. So it's been great. It's been great.
How does Jainism inflect the trajectory of the band as you've formed in the last few years? Like, I understand the inclusion of those tracks at the end of every album, but like the So I'm almost asking, how does your diet and this very stripped down, very meticulous kind of eating, how does that translate into this sort of explosive, cathartic energy that comes out in, because there's so much restraint within the diet, perhaps, and so much care and thought that goes into it, and so much catharsis in the music. How are they related?
I don't know necessarily that the restriction in the diet translates, you know, equally to restriction in the music or whatever in terms of the explosion. I mean, I know one thing that it translates in, that I've always held, you know, in terms of my approach to music is this term called anekantavada, which is multiplicity of viewpoints. It's also a main kind
pluralism.
Of... Pluralism. Yeah. Exactly. It's something that's always stuck with me ever since I started composing. Mm-hmm. This idea of just genres and commodification has never appealed to me. You know, to me, that's restricting. And I've always kind of let that go while understanding I am rooted in vocabulary of certain genres and certain things, but just trying my hardest to let that go and not let that inform how I'm going to approach something or play something, but just let everything just seep in, the spirit, you know, and the vibe and the music of all the other bandmates that are playing, and to just try and be as open as possible. So this idea of anekantavada, the multiplicity of viewpoints,
So there's no one particular truth, right? It's that everybody's experience has its own objectivity to it, and because we're not omniscient, we can't know
correct
what the right way is in every single instance.
Correct. It's like the story of the three blind men and the elephant touching different parts of the elephant and trying to relate what is this elephant, you know, and everyone has their different perspective, and if we come to understand that, that's reflected in the spirit of Red Baroth in our music in terms of there is no defining genre. You know, it sounds crazy and a little bit like ethnomusicology to say it's bhangra with jazz, with funk, with go-go and everything, and all you can really do is experience it. And the message with the band is not necessarily guided through Jainism, but the idea of multiplicity of viewpoints, which for me was informed through Jainism, but everyone in the band has that same idea of just pluralism. Everyone comes from a different background, whether they're Sikh, whether they're Hindu, whether they're Christian, whether they're Jewish, you know, everyone has a different background that they're coming to, and not even religiously, but politically as well, anything that directs their moral compass. But the idea with the band and the music is inclusiveness, it's tolerance, it's pluralism, and it's allowing for that expression to happen where we can all be different, and we can understand and appreciate that.
And share it together.
Yeah.
Well, I cannot wait to hear you guys at the Goog. Sonny, thank you so much for coming by to speak with us today.
Thank you for having me.
Once again, ladies and gentlemen, you can catch Sonny Jain and his band Red Baroth on the Joe's Pub stage at the Great Googamooga on Saturday, May 18th in Prospect Park, if you've got your tickets already. The Great Googamooga will be happening May 17th, 18th, and 19th with over 20 bands and 85 participating restaurants. It promises to be an amusement park of food, drink, and music. Find out more information at brooklyn.googamooga.com. I want to thank you for tuning into this broadcast. This program, in addition to the over 30 weekly shows produced by Heritage Radio Network, is available for free on our website, www.heritageradionetwork.org.
thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.